Here's your fair value brief for Thursday, July 16, 2026. The Strait of Hormuz remains closed, but oil prices are staying surprisingly calm. Brent crude is holding at $84.70, down just 0.3% on the day, even with Iran's renewed blockade and U.S. airstrikes. Traders are betting this disruption will be short-lived, but if tensions drag on, gasoline and diesel prices could surge by next week, making the Fed's inflation battle even tougher. PayPal is soaring, up 17%, after a $53 billion takeover bid from private equity firm Advent and Stripe. That's a 27% premium over PayPal's recent lows, and it shows just how hungry private equity is for undervalued tech assets right now. And BlackRock's assets have swelled to a staggering $15 trillion. The firm's earnings blew past estimates, sending shares up 6.6%. Meanwhile, Wall Street banks like JP Morgan and Goldman Sachs are raking in record trading revenue. It's clear, a risk-on market is padding profits for financial firms. Now, to the markets. For the third time this month, Iran has threatened to block the Strait of Hormuz, the world's most vital oil shipping lane. The U.S. responded with airstrikes on Iranian ports, reinstated a naval blockade, and warned of further action. Yet oil markets barely flinched. Brent crude closed Wednesday at $84.70, down just 0.3%, and WTI crude sits at $79.59, virtually unchanged. Even gasoline futures are flat. This is an indifference, it's a calculated bet. The market is pricing in a brief disruption, not a prolonged crisis. Here's why. First, the blockade isn't new. The strait has been effectively closed since mid-June, and shipping routes have already adjusted. Only 7 ships passed through on Wednesday, down from a pre-conflict average of 50 to 60 per day, but traders have already factored in the slowdown. Second, oil inventories are holding, for now. The U.S. Energy Information Administration reported a 1.7 million barrel draw in crude stocks last week, but gasoline inventories also fell by 1.5 million barrels. Refinery utilization hit 96.2%, the highest in months, meaning refineries are running at near full capacity to meet demand. The system is stretched, but still functioning. Third, there are workarounds. Saudi Arabia and the UAE can bypass the strait via pipelines to the Red Sea, though capacity is limited to about 3.5 to 5.5 million barrels per day. And the U.S. has tapped strategic reserves in the past to stabilize prices. Finally, the Fed is the bigger focus right now. With the producer price index coming in softer than expected, up just 0.2% in June, traders are more concerned about whether the Federal Reserve will cut rates in September than about Middle East tensions. Lower rates could boost oil demand, so the market is looking past the immediate geopolitical risks. But here's the catch. If this standoff drags on, the math changes. Gasoline and diesel inventories are already tight. Refinery utilization can't stay at 96% indefinitely. And if Iran follows through on threats to block other routes, like the Bab el-Mandeb Strait, which links the Red Sea to the Indian Ocean, the backup plans vanish. That's when prices could spike, and the Fed's inflation fight would get a lot tougher. For now, the market assumes a quick resolution. But if tensions persist, we could see $5 gasoline by next week, and the Fed's September rate cut might get pushed to 2027. Here's what's going on today. The Strait of Hormuz is closed again. Iran and the U.S. are exchanging airstrikes, and yet the VIX, Wall Street's fear gauge, sits at 15.89, barely above its long-term average. Meanwhile, Wall Street is on track for its best year ever. BlackRock's assets just hit $15 trillion, and PayPal is up 17% on a buyout offer. So why the disconnect? Traders are treating Middle East tensions as noise, not a systemic threat. The real drivers right now are earnings and M&A. United Health, GE, Netflix, and TSMC report today, and their results will determine whether this risk-on mood continues. If earnings disappoint, the market's complacency about geopolitics could evaporate overnight. Bonds are showing quiet caution. The 10-year Treasury yield edged up to 4.58%. But the move was modest. The Fed's patience is being tested. PPI was soft, but oil is up 11% over the past week. If gasoline prices jump next week, the Fed's September rate cut could be delayed, and stocks would feel the pain. crypto is staying calm. Bitcoin is down 1% to $64,000, and Ethereum is off 1.7% to $1,880. The lack of volatility stands out. Geopolitical chaos usually sends Bitcoin higher as a digital gold hedge. This time, silence. That suggests traders see the Middle East tensions as contained, or that crypto's safe haven appeal is fading. The dollar is weakening slightly. The DXY is at 100.54, down 0.4% this week, but not dramatically. The British pound is the exception, up 0.8% today after UK GDP beat expectations, showing 0.1% growth in May, better than the forecasted decline. That's a rare bright spot in an otherwise slowing global economy. Bottom line, the market is ignoring the Middle East for now. But if oil spikes or earnings falter, that complacency will disappear fast. Now, the big picture. Oil's uneasy calm is the story right now. The Strait of Hormuz is closed, Iran is threatening to block more shipping lanes, and the US is launching airstrikes, yet oil prices are barely moving. Brent crude sits at $84.70, down just 0.3% on the day, and WTI is flat at $79.59. This isn't because the market is oblivious. Traders are betting on a short-term disruption, not a prolonged crisis. But the bets could backfire. Gasoline inventories fell by 1.5 million barrels last week, and refinery utilization is at 96.2%, meaning refineries are running at near maximum capacity to meet demand. If the blockade lasts more than a few days, gasoline and diesel prices will climb. The U.S. has alternatives, like Saudi pipelines to the Red Sea, but capacity is limited. If Iran blocks the Bab el-Mandeb Strait, which connects the Red Sea to the Indian Ocean, those alternatives disappear, and oil could hit $100 overnight. Bonds reflect subtle caution. The 10-year Treasury yield ticked up to 4.58%, and the 2-year yield fell to 4.19%, flattening the yield curve slightly. That's a sign traders are hedging, not panicking, but not ignoring risks either. The Fed's patience is being tested. PPI was soft, but if gasoline spikes next week, inflation could tick up again, and the Fed's September rate cut would be in doubt. Stocks are holding up, but the rotation is telling. The S&P 500 is up 0.4% on the week, but the NASDAQ is down 0.3% as tech stocks face pressure. Semiconductors lead the decline. Micron fell 8%, Marvel dropped 7.3%, and Intel is down 4.4%. The AI trade is pausing. Meanwhile, financials are rallying. BlackRock surged 6.6% after its earnings beat, and Goldman Sachs is up 11.9% over the past week. The market is shifting from high-flying tech to cash-generating stocks, a classic late-cycle move. The dollar is slightly weaker. The DXY is at 100.54, down 0.4% this week, but not collapsing. The British pound is the outlier, up 0.8% today, trading at $1.35, but that's more about dollar weakness than UK strength. Crypto is quiet. Bitcoin is down 1% to 64,000, and Ethereum is off 1.7% to 1,880. The lack of volatility is notable. Usually, geopolitical chaos sends Bitcoin higher as a digital gold hedge. This time, nothing. That suggests traders see the Middle East tensions as contained, or that crypto's safe haven narrative is weakening. Around the world, Middle East tensions are rising, but markets stay calm, for now. Iran and the US are in another standoff. The US reinstated a naval blockade on all Iranian ports on Tuesday, and Iran responded by threatening to shut down all other export routes serving the United States and its allies. The Strait of Hormuz, already closed since mid-June, saw just 7 ships pass through on Wednesday, down from a pre-conflict average of 50 to 60 per day. Yet oil prices barely moved. Brent crude sits at $84.70, down just 0.3% on the day, and WTI is flat at $79.59. The market's calm is a gamble. Traders assume this is a short-term disruption, not a prolonged crisis. But if the blockade lasts more than a few days, gasoline and diesel prices will climb. The US has alternatives, like Saudi pipelines to the Red Sea, but capacity is limited. If Iran blocks the Bab el-Mandeb Strait, the alternatives disappear, and oil could hit $100 overnight. Meanwhile, the U.S. is increasing military pressure. The Pentagon is considering ground troops and strikes on Iran's nuclear-linked Pickaxe Mountain site, according to the Wall Street Journal. But the market isn't pricing in a wider war. The VIX is at 15.89, barely above its long-term average. That could change quickly if Iran retaliates against U.S. assets or allies. In China, the economy is slowing, but stimulus is expected. China's GDP grew just 4.3% in the second quarter, the slowest pace since 2022. The data was worse than expected, and the property crisis continues to weigh on growth. But here's the twist: the market isn't panicking. The yuan is flat, trading at 6.77 to the dollar, and Asian stocks are holding steady. Why? Because traders assume Beijing will step in with stimulus. The People's Bank of China has already cut interest rates twice this year, and more easing is likely. The bigger question is whether it will work. Chinese consumers remain cautious, and the property sector, which accounts for about 30% of GDP, is still struggling. If stimulus fails to revive growth, the slowdown could drag on global demand for commodities and luxury goods. The UK avoided recession, but the outlook remains weak. The UK economy grew 0.1% in May, beating forecasts of a 0.1% decline. That's the good news. The bad news: the broader trend is still weak. Manufacturing jumped 2.3% year over year, but industrial production fell 0.5% month over month. The trade deficit narrowed, but only because imports fell faster than exports. The Bank of England is in a bind. Inflation is still above target at 3.2% in June, but growth is sluggish. If Middle East tensions push oil prices higher, the BOE may have to keep rates elevated, even as the economy struggles. The British pound is up 0.8% today, trading at $1.35, but that's more about dollar weakness than UK strength. In Japan, the yen is strengthening, but not for good reasons. The yen is up slightly, trading at 162.17 to the dollar, but it's not because Japan's economy is booming. It's because the US dollar is weakening on softer PPI data, and traders are betting the Bank of Japan will intervene to support the yen. Japan's economy is still struggling with weak consumption and slow wage growth. If the BOJ does intervene, it could trigger a broader dollar sell-off, but that's a short-term trade, not a sign of strength. Now, the companies making news today. Earnings and deals are taking center stage, while tech stumbles. BlackRock surged 6.6% after the asset manager reported a 20% rise in profits and assets under management soared past $15 trillion. PayPal jumped 17% on a $53 billion buyout offer. Private equity firm Advent and Stripe are in talks to acquire PayPal for $53 billion, a 27% premium to its recent lows. Semiconductors are leading the sell-off. Micron fell 8% and Marvel dropped 7.3% as the chip sector came under pressure. United Health beat expectations, but healthcare stocks are mixed. United Health's earnings beat forecasts, and the company raised its full-year guidance. But healthcare stocks are split. Eli Lilly is up 0.4%, while Johnson & Johnson fell 2.7%. TSMC's record earnings failed to impress. Taiwan semiconductor manufacturing company reported record revenue and profits, driven by AI chip demand. But its stock fell 1.4% in after-hours trading. Uber agreed to buy Delivery Hero for $14.8 billion. The deal would create a global food delivery giant, but it's not a sure thing. Regulators will scrutinize the merger, and Delivery Hero shareholders still need to approve it. ABB is buying Rotork for $5.6 billion. The Swiss engineering giant is betting big on electrification and automation, two key trends in industrial tech. Altus International is facing debt default accusations. Lenders holding about $9 billion in bonds claim Patrick Drahi's telecom empire stripped away collateral through intercompany deals. ConAgra's new CEO is reviewing every product. John Brace, who took over the food giant in June, is evaluating ConAgra's entire portfolio to cut underperforming brands. And China is restricting AI chatbot romances. Beijing is limiting AI chatbots from offering companionship services, part of a broader push to boost birth rates. From Washington, the Fed's balancing act is getting harder. The Federal Reserve is caught between two signals: soft inflation data, and rising oil prices. On one hand, the producer price index came in softer than expected in June, rising just 0.2%, a sign that inflation pressures are easing. On the other hand, Brent crude is up 11% over the past week, and gasoline prices could spike if the Strait of Hormuz blockade drags on. That would push inflation higher just as the Fed is considering rate cuts. Fed officials are divided. Some, like Governor Christopher Waller, suggest the central bank can afford to wait. Others, like Governor Michelle Bowman, warn that inflation progress has stalled. The minutes from the June FOMC meeting showed that the Fed is monitoring geopolitical risks, including Middle East tensions and China's slowdown, but isn't ready to act yet. The bond market is pricing in a 60% chance of a rate cut in September, down from 70% a week ago. If oil prices keep rising, that probability could drop further. The 10-year Treasury yield ticked up to 4.58%, and the 2-year yield fell to 4.19%, flattening the yield curve slightly. That's a sign traders are hedging, not panicking, but not ignoring risks either. Banks are enjoying a record year, but risks lurk. J.P. Morgan, Goldman Sachs, and other big banks are reporting record trading revenue, thanks to a risk-on market where clients are actively trading stocks, bonds, and derivatives. But beneath the surface, there are warning signs. Credit card delinquencies are at 15-year highs, and commercial real estate loans are under stress. The Fed is also tightening oversight. It recently proposed new rules to strengthen banks' anti-money laundering programs, and it's closely watching risks from private credit and leveraged loans. If the economy weakens, those risks could turn into losses, testing the bank's resilience. Housing policy is becoming a political flashpoint. A new law restricting big investors from buying single-family homes is moving through Congress, but it's facing pushback from both parties. Supporters argue that Wall Street's purchases are pricing out first-time buyers. Opponents say the law could backfire by reducing the supply of rental housing, making the housing shortage even worse. The debate highlights a bigger issue: the U.S. doesn't have enough homes. Builders are struggling with high costs for land, labor, and materials, and zoning laws in many cities make it hard to add supply. Until that changes, prices will keep rising, and so will the political pressure to do something about housing affordability. Under the hood, bonds are signaling caution, but not panic. The bond market is sending a subtle but important message. The risk premium for long-term growth is rising, but credit risk isn't. Here's the breakdown. The 10-year Treasury yield is at 4.58%, up slightly from yesterday. But the move isn't about inflation fears. It's about term premium, the extra yield investors demand to hold long-term bonds instead of short-term ones. The term premium has been rising because the market is pricing in slower growth over the next decade. That's a quiet vote of no confidence in the economy's long-term prospects. Credit spreads are tight. The option-adjusted spread on investment-grade corporate bonds is just 0.79%, well below its long-term average. High-yield spreads are at 2.72%, also below average. That means investors aren't worried about defaults. They're worried about duration risk and growth risk. The yield curve is flattening. The gap between the 10-year yield and the 2-year yield is just 0.39 percentage points. That's a sign the market expects the Fed to cut rates eventually, but not because inflation is vanquished. It's because growth will slow, forcing the Fed's hand. Mortgage rates are the canary in the coal mine. The 30-year fixed rate is at 6.49%, down slightly from last week, but still near two-decade highs. If the Fed delays rate cuts, mortgages will stay expensive, and the housing market will stay sluggish. That's a headwind for consumer spending, which drives 70% of GDP. What would change this picture? A sustained oil spike above $90 for Brent would reignite inflation fears and send yields higher across the curve. A sharp slowdown in jobs, monthly payrolls below 100,000, would force the Fed to cut rates faster, steepening the curve. Or a credit event, like a major corporate default, would widen spreads and signal that the market's complacency about defaults is misplaced. For now, the bond market is in a holding pattern, betting on slower growth, but not a recession. That's a fragile equilibrium, and it won't take much to tip it. Worth learning today: interest, the price of time. Yesterday, we asked you to predict how the market would react to the core PPI report. The actual number came in at 0.2%, below the forecast of 0.3%. Here's why it matters. When PPI rises less than expected, it signals that inflation pressures are easing in the pipeline. That's good news for the Fed, which is trying to bring inflation down to its 2% target. The softer PPI number helped push the 10-year Treasury yield down slightly and gave stocks a small boost. It also reduced the odds of a Fed rate hike this month to just 10%, down from 43% earlier in the week. Lower PPI means lower inflation fears, which means lower rates and happier markets. Now, what is interest really? You've heard the term 1,000 times. Interest rates, interest payments, APY. But what is interest actually? Interest is the price of time. It's what you pay when you borrow money, or what you earn when you lend it. Think of it like rent, but for cash instead of an apartment. Here's how it works in the real world. When you borrow, say, $10,000 for a car loan at 5% interest, you're not just paying back $10,000. You're paying back $10,000 plus 5% of that amount every year until the loan is repaid. That 5% is the cost of getting to use the money now instead of saving up for years. When you save, if you put $1,000 in a high-yield savings account with a 4% APY, the bank pays you 4% interest. That's their cost for getting to use your money to lend to others. Why does interest exist? Three reasons: inflation, risk, and opportunity cost. Inflation means that if a bank lends you $100 today, that $100 will buy less in a year. Interest compensates for that loss in purchasing power. Risk is the chance the borrower might not pay the money back. Interest is the lender's insurance policy. An opportunity cost means that if the bank lends you $100, it can't lend that $100 to someone else. Interest is the price of that missed opportunity. Now, simple versus compound interest. Simple interest is calculated only on the original amount. If you borrow $100 at 5% simple interest, you owe $5 in interest every year, no matter how long you take to pay it back. Compound interest is calculated on the original amount plus any accumulated interest. If you borrow $100 at 5% compound interest, you owe $5 the first year, but the second year, you owe 5% on $105. Over time, this turns small amounts into big ones. This is why your 401k or credit card debt can grow so fast. That APY on your savings account? It's compound interest in action. If your bank offers 4% APY, your money grows not just by 4% of your original deposit, but by 4% of your growing balance. Over years, that difference adds up. Quick check. If you have $10,000 in a savings account at 4% APY, how much will you have after 10 years if the rate stays the same? With simple interest, you'd have $14,000. With compound interest, you'd have about $14,802. That extra $802 is the power of compounding. The bigger picture: interest as the economy's thermostat. Interest rates don't just affect your mortgage or savings account. They're the most powerful tool the Federal Reserve uses to control the economy. When rates rise, borrowing gets expensive. People and businesses spend less. The economy cools. When rates fall, borrowing gets cheap. Spending and investing pick up. The economy heats up. Right now, the Fed has rates at 5.25 to 5.5%, the highest in 22 years, to fight inflation. That's why mortgages are at 6.5%, credit card rates are near 20%, and your savings account finally pays more than 0.01%. What to watch this week? Today, we've got U.S. retail sales for June at 8:30 a.m. Eastern. This is the key number to watch. If consumers are pulling back, the Fed may cut rates sooner. Also at 8:30, U.S. jobless claims. A jump in claims would signal a weakening labor market. And earnings reports from United Health, GE, Netflix, and TSMC. Friday, we'll see U.S. housing starts for June at 8:30 a.m., giving us a read on the health of the housing market. And at 10 a.m., U.S. consumer sentiment. If consumers are gloomy, spending could slow. Next week, on Tuesday, Tesla, AT&T, and Google report earnings. Wednesday, it's Boeing, IBM, and Lam Research. And Thursday, Intel, American Airlines, and Lockheed Martin. That's all for today. See you tomorrow.